The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox is here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management, along with Jill Archer, Regional Estate and Insurance Specialist with IG. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Good morning to you all. I hope you had a fabulous week. That being said, kind of dull on the finance front, but I guess calm waters are nice. There's no problems there.
Yeah, no big news. We had the inflation come out the week before, and then, you know, a lot of political things going on, which is kind of par for the course. Nothing a whole lot there. And other than, you know, we hope to see the weather start get warmer. That's about it. So, yeah, fairly calm. And the markets kind of showed that, too. Not a lot of movement either way. You'll see there's a reaction when anything that happens, but it's usually very short-lived. And again, we've always talked about long-term financial planning. And certainly we don't like to look at things even year by year is too long, is too short. Never mind minute by minute, like some people often get kind of involved into their whole markets and their portfolio. And honestly, that's insanity to me. And it's so nice when you see clients that have been around for 35 years and they look and says, well, this has been great. You know, we've averaged, you know, 7% a year. And it's, but again, it's looking at the time frame as a longer term. Now, I know today we're very lucky to have Jill with us today. And it's, we're going to switch gears a little bit. And, you know, we've talked about personal planning mainly. But every so often, and there's so many entrepreneurs in Canada, and they run businesses, and they're a whole different kettle, you know, a whole different beast. Entrepreneur is a risk taker, okay? And Jill is really involved in risk management. And how do we kind of work risk management with a risk taker? And this is where Jill's going to help us today.
Yes, absolutely. There's so much planning that goes into overall financial planning with individuals. But when we start talking about business owners, you know, they have their individual planning that needs to be done to take care of their families. And then they also have business planning that's required. And so, you know, there's this whole topic around business continuation, business succession, and that can be a whole lot of different things. It involves various components of financial planning. And, you know, there's lots of tools out there, financial tools and legal tools that can be used to really help these clients with their planning. And, you know, we're always looking at some of the key things, whether it's personally or corporately. We want to maximize tax planning opportunities, which really essentially looks at minimizing the tax that they would be paying, as well as, you know, facilitating the simplest ways that assets can transfer or that, you know, risks can be covered off when it comes to, you know, some of the risks that they've taken on with their business, whether it's covering debts, whether it's insuring their employees through group benefits, insuring themselves and some of their key people with respect to the various insurance products that would protect them and their business.
Yeah, that's great, Jill. And you know what? There's so many stages that go into a business. And I know most are just trying to survive. They're trying to start up a business and let's get this thing off the ground. And, you know, probably the last thing they're worried about it when they first start is just insurance. They're trying to, you know, create an income for themselves. They're working 50 to 60 hours a week. And, you know, how does these stages of a business kind of fit into insurance?
Yeah, great question. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the risks or the kinds of things that people look at change over time. And that's the same for individuals. You know, when you're young and you're just acquiring a mortgage, perhaps having children, you know, your needs for insurance and financial planning are very different than when you are in a retirement phase. So similarly with a business, when they're looking at the different types of business cycles or business stages, you know, that the kind of planning that needs to be done definitely does change. Insurance is never sort of top of mind for anyone, whether they're an individual or a business owner, let's be fair.
Yeah, good point.
You know, other than me and what I do in my day-to-day life, it's just really not part of everybody's day-to-day thinking. But when a business is starting up and really in that phase of survival and you know, just trying to get their feet off the ground, there's just some basic stuff that should be looked at. And you know, that would be looking at insuring themselves, making sure that, you know, if something happens to them, that their risk is mitigated. They can either, you know, financially support themselves during the remainder of their life. So that would be looking at disability income, critical illness for themselves, and then also protecting themselves with life insurance. And, you know, we talk about that individually, but it's very much the same for businesses. There's also, some business protection that is very specific to business owners. And that's where we can look at insuring, you know, their overhead expenses or looking at covering any business loans that they have. Some lending institutions require that they insure those loans to, especially in the early stages of a business. But then
Yeah,
as they go ahead.
it's kind of interesting because we insurance isn't something anybody really goes out and I got to get some insurance, okay? Yet when there's an event that takes place, and as sad as it is, the first thing that comes out of other people says is, "Well, I hope they had insurance." Okay, they all say the same thing. Well, or the you know the beneficiary or the widow or widower is saying, well, at least my husband or wife had insurance and we took care of that. So it's one of those things that everybody wants after the event. Of course, nobody wants it before the event because that's the thing. Nobody really wants to talk about death, disability, critical illness. It's not, it's almost being pessimistic. And an entrepreneur, you know, just by nature is an optimistic, hardworking person. Otherwise they wouldn't be an entrepreneur. Okay, they think the best things will happen, it'll all work out. And you know, you probably have many examples yourself of what you've gone through when dealing with consultants like myself. But you know, I had a situation not long ago, just last year, where unfortunately the husband in his late 40s passed away. Great health. And fortunately, there was insurance to work this through. Now, he would have been more in a maturity part of the business, had been going on for quite some time. But you know, let's talk about those risks a bit more detail here, Jill. Like life insurance is kind of the one that first comes top of mind. And usually when you're starting a business, you might have a partner, might be yourself. But you know, you've got a lot of risks because often the whole family's involved. You got a lot of dependents. We think about mortgage insurance, no problem. It's almost like an automatic, but we often don't think about, you know, the debts a business has. So could you get into kind of the risk from the life insurance and why somebody should have that?
So, you know, it can be used to cover just business loans, as I mentioned before, you know, startup loans or continuing ongoing loans when, you know, a business will perhaps own property where they're going to have a mortgage on that property. It may be a business loan that's used just to sort of facilitate cash flow on a regular basis. So, you know, life insurance can cover that debt and leave the business where it is either flush with cash or able to pay off that loan and then still look to, you know, be a viable business for the remaining business owners if there are other business owners, or if there aren't and it was a sole owner, it still at least provides some value in the business to be there for the beneficiaries. And that's really critical. You know, somebody spent a lot of time and energy building a business, and then if the debts that are remaining there just wipe out all that value, and then there's no value remaining for the family that, you know, really bore the brunt of those long hours and time away from them, you know, so that can be really critical to, you know, ensuring that there is some viability there. As I mentioned, some lending institutions are going to require it, and quite frankly, I think it's a great idea. And term insurance is perfect for that. You don't need fancy, expensive insurance. Term insurance is specifically designed to cover those short-term debts and obligations, and that's, you know, that's where this fits perfectly.
Perfect. And then you go into the next one. And this is the one that, you know, disability is often overlooked more than any of them. And you look at on a personal side, about 80% of all mortgage foreclosures is due to a disability, not a death, because people often have their mortgage, you know, debt insured. But disability is far greater. Now, on a business, and I've had this happen a few times where somebody gets hurt and maybe short term. And this one particular case was long term, and they had partners. Well, the partners can pick up the slack, but that can only go for so long. And if had they had a disability insurance policy on all the different partners, they would have not had to worry about using some of their cash flow to support somebody's no longer able to work. And that's a drain on the business. That's like having, you know, a dependent now as part of your main partnership. And now you have to find an employee and pay that person for that person's job. So disability is extremely important. And then critical illness. How does that work, say, from a business owner's point of view?
Yeah. So, you know, interestingly enough, if somebody becomes critically ill, you know, on an individual side, what we look at, and we talked about this a couple of months ago, you know, it's designed to provide cash flow so that somebody can either go get treatment or cover some of the additional expenses that may occur there. On a business side, what it does is it allows cash flow to come into the corporation to, again, allow for somebody else to sort of step up and take over some of the responsibilities for that person, or for them to ensure that, you know, the business, again, has cash that gives them the breathing room that they may need in order to continue to cover debts while the business sort of figures out how do we now work with this person, you know, possibly here part of the time, but not all of the time. So it can be a really effective tool as well. You know, if I'm looking at ranking them in order, life insurance is the simple one because most people think about it, know about it. And again, if a lender requires it, then people will go with it. But disability and income replacement is really the number one piece that should be looked at. And then the life insurance and then the critical illness. That's, you know, sort
That's the order.
Yeah, from a risk perspective and from the standpoint of the impact that that insurance would have if something were to happen. Yeah.
I see. Now, it's, you know, you mentioned about business overhead insurance. I'm sure there's a lot of people have never even heard of that before. The way I look at it, the show must go on. Okay. You've got employees, you've got everything going still, but all of a sudden you're unable to because you're going to be missing work for X amount of days, years, months, whatever it might be. How does business overhead insurance work?
So it's a disability product, but it's designed to cover the business, not the individual. So the individual disability insurance, whether it's corporately owned or personally owned, is designed to replace that income for that individual. The disability overhead protection is designed to cover the expenses of the business, the fixed expenses, as you said, to carry on the show, the fixed expenses of the business while that person is in recovery. So it's designed really to protect the business as opposed to the individual. And it makes a huge difference to how well a business can continue to float those expenses and carry on in a way that, you know, leaves them not just viable, but productive.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox is here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management, along with Jill Archer, Regional Estate and Insurance Specialist with IG. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. We're going to take a quick break here. We're coming back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox is here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management, along with Jill Archer, Regional Estate and Insurance Specialist with IG. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. We're talking about insurance and how it affects business.
Yes. And the next thing, you know, you got this business, it's finally rolling. You actually got an income. The owners are taking a salary. This is all good. And you think, okay, well, things are rolling, but they're busy. They're super busy. And the funny thing is, I've come across many times and we talk about buy sell agreements and basically, you know, how do you buy or sell your company? If you've got partners, okay, how do you work that? So you may not want a partner spouse all of a sudden is your partner in case of a death. And so these are critical to a business. Not at all. Again, like life insurance, none of this matters as everybody's happy and getting along and alive, et cetera, or not disabled. But as soon as there's an event, a health event that takes place, it can really change things. Unfortunately, they're kind of like a will. You always should have one. And I actually suggest people get them right at the beginning. Okay. Because I know that seems odd because they have no assets yet. They have no income yet. They're just kind of getting it rolling. But it's a lot easier than when there's a lot of assets to play and things get a little more complicated. How do you look at the buy sell agreements, and more importantly, how do you see them being funded?
Great question. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I do work with business owners and corporations. And, you know, we often work together to talk about buy-sell agreements, shareholder agreements, or partnership agreements. They're all sort of in the same vein, just depending on how the business is structured. And, you know, it's really great when a business has a really solid buy-sell agreement, but if there is no funding to actually provide cash to facilitate any of the events, then they can actually be in a worse position than if they didn't have an agreement. And I know that sounds kind of backwards, but the agreement is really just the legal papers that tell you what the events are and how it will, you know, what triggers any event to occur. And so that can include life, you know, if a business owner passes away, if they become disabled, if they become critically ill, if they retire, if they get divorced, you know, there's a lot of components that can go into it. But at the end of the day, if there is no funding, you know, that can cause a real problem. So, you know, is it funded by them drawing cash out of the business? Is it funded by borrowing funds? You know, are they issuing promissory notes? Or, you know, what are the different ways that this can be done? And so, borrowing funds can be done if a lender doesn't have any concerns with respect to the business now that a key person is either disabled or has passed away and no longer there. But, you know, if I was a bank, I probably wouldn't be as interested in setting up a new line of credit or you know, a new debt vehicle at that point. Promissory notes. So that's essentially where we say, you know, I promise to pay you X over, you know, X number of years or at different time frames. And, you know, that can be done, and lots of people kind of consider that as the best way that they want to go. But the problem with that is, you know, do they have the cash to do that? Again, if it's not funded, you know, the note is, again, just a something that states when things will occur, but there is not necessarily any cash flow there for that from the deceased estate or in the corporation, you know, with the assets that they have. So you can use business earnings or assets as well, but you know, what were those originally intended for? If they were originally intended for something else for the business, now you have hampered their ability to still continue to do those things. And selling business assets, again, you know, depending on what kind of dollar amount is required, you know, is that a viable option to keep the business still running? And, you know, people take advantage of people when they're in dire situations.
Yeah,
sometimes,
yeah, no kidding.
You know, is it a fire sale? All of a sudden now you're not getting the value out of those assets. So insurance, as always, you know, it uses pennies to buy dollars. It's there within typically 30 to 60 days of the death occurring, if we're talking life insurance. And it's really, you know, that tax-free source of cash that really gives people or a business breathing room, time to think, time to make decisions, or the actual cash to fund that buyout.
Yeah, no, great answer, Jill. You know, look at this even from a CRA viewpoint. If there's a shareholder that dies, okay, it's deemed that they have sold their shares of the business.
Yep.
And so there is a capital gain often. Well, they're not that patient in getting paid. Okay.
Nope.
They want to get paid just like any time. So 6 months is about the outside, you know, say the average situation of needing the money. Well, you try to sell a business in 6 months at a fair price. And, yeah, and you know, it generally doesn't happen. And especially on small businesses, and there's so many moving parts there, and so much may have been tied, as you mentioned, to the shareholder that passed away. And so now they think, well, what's the business really worth? And again, these guys are desperate. Maybe we can lowball them and get this business. So, you know, having this money come basically from heaven to help support the situation is unbelievable. Like, who doesn't want that, right? And it's just one of those things that nobody really wants to pay the cost, but they all want it afterwards. And banks are not the best. They'll, as the saying goes, they'll give you an umbrella when it's sunny, okay, and take it away when it's raining. And that is really kind of the thing, because they're looking at their risks. They don't want a risky asset there. They don't want somebody. So insurance is such an easy way to go when you're healthy, you have this, and it's there. It's peace of mind. But again, it's one of those checks in the box, whether it's, you know, this is corporate insurance we're talking about. The same is dealing on the personal side, but you really need it. Now, on a different, on a fully, you know, totally different level, you're starting to get this business going. The other side is, I guess, a group benefit package. And I would say, you know, what's the real purpose of a group benefit package, Jill?
So group benefits are really fantastic from an employee standpoint. You know, you get some coverage for your health or your dental, your massages, things along those lines. But from an employer perspective, it's really beneficial from the standpoint of attracting and retaining key employees. If you don't have a benefits package and another company that does a similar thing offers a benefit package, you know, if I'm looking to apply to multiple companies, that's part of the overall compensation package for me. So I want to know, do I have the opportunity to use some benefits? And so, you know, that might be part of a deciding factor with somebody joining a company or with them staying with a company.
So, yeah, no, it's kind of interesting from an employee standpoint. There's been polls done recently as what, you know, ranking in importance, mm-hmm. and group benefits are always right at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got an employee and you want to keep them, group benefits are the way to go. Now, it's interesting. As you kind of get into the maturity level, you're saying, okay, maybe I'm going to look at retiring sometime soon. And, you know, what should I do? Well, then you get into, you know, it's kind of interesting. From my perspective, you're looking at, you know, insurance. Okay. I'm kind of looking at everything. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of pieces moving. And I, you know, we look at the personal side. So when you look at a business owner, they have two different lives. They have their personal life, and they have their business life, and we try to interweave those together. But I know when we're doing a financial plan, we often try to minimize the business side. Say, Ken, based on what you're doing as an employee of the business and everything, how will you do? Because the business can be a fairly risky asset. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to say, okay, we got all our money tied in the business. This is fantastic. We're doing extremely well. Well, that can change. Okay, we've seen huge companies mm-hmm. all of a sudden not do well, and we've seen that in the stock market. But never mind a small business in Canada. So we talked about, you know, having a business will. Now, an idea with a business will is you have a separate business for your personal side, and you have a will for your for the business. And the nice thing about doing that is you avoid probate. Mm-hmm. So on $1 million business, that saves you about $15,000 on probate. So that's always a great thing to have two wills. And it's also interesting when you're always talking to business owners, they're always talking about how their business is worth. And goodwill is often very much overstated, okay? Because they think it's often worth more than it is. And it is only worth what people will sell it. So, mm-hmm. you know, you look at all these different strategies when you come into the kind of the more mature side of a business. You know, what goes through your mind, Jill, when you start looking at that?
Yeah, so from an insurance perspective, you know, it's really about, have we done the things that we needed to do to protect the risk in the earlier phases? And now, are there things that we can do to help really supplement and do some asset diversification with a client? So as you mentioned, businesses are a bit risky. Even as they get into the maturity phase, there's still a level of risk that's associated there. So, you know, from the perspective of diversifying assets, businesses can own, you know, real estate, they can own investments, they can own the actual assets that the business requires to function, and the business can also own permanent insurance. And the advantage of owning permanent insurance there is really that it is a different asset class that provides some real asset diversification, tax sheltering, you know, the opportunity to pay out a completely tax-free death benefit into the corporation, again, you know, in a timely fashion that provides that cash. And then there's a really interesting feature of life insurance policies paid out corporately that a lot of people aren't familiar with. And I don't like to get too technical when we're talking here on the radio, but it provides what's called a capital dividend account credit. And that essentially, in a very simple nutshell, means that whatever that credit amount is, let's say it's $1 million, that allows the corporation to pay out a tax-free dividend to a shareholder for up to $1 million. And so life insurance really provides a huge opportunity there corporately to be able to get money out of the corp on a tax-free basis, which typically is otherwise a complicated thing to do. All these other assets attract tax, and you know, during their growth phase and or when you're trying to pull them out of the corporation.
Yeah, you make a good point here. And again, you know, as you're growing your business, now you've had this operating business for all this time. And, you know, we talk about this capital gains exemption. Mm-hmm. And currently the capital gains exemption for this year is $1,016,836. You know, what a strange number. Okay, this started, this means that, and this applies to both farmers and small business owners. And this started back at $500,000 in 1994. Mm-hmm. It got moved to 750 in 2008, and that was really through indexing. And now it's indexed every year since. And now you have over $1 million of a capital gains exemption within the business. And so this actually works out to 2.23% per year indexing, which is basically the inflation rate over that period of time. It's kind of interesting, though, when you've gone from 500,000 in 94 to over $1 million now, it kind of gives you an idea just how inflation affects, you know, so many things. This is a good side when you see the, okay, the capital gains exemption has gone up. But you think on a personal side, oh yeah, that car I bought for 20,000 is now 40,000. And mm-hmm. you're seeing it in groceries and everything else. So, but mm-hmm. it's something that if you can you can use, fantastic. And this is also, you know, I kind of go back to your capital dividend account. It is a little confusing, but if you have a corporation, first of all, if you have interest in it, you want to, it's taxed at 50%, okay? And you should have this in a holding company. In order to qualify for this capital gains exemption, you can only have 10% of your assets in passive assets. And that would be investments, like such as things paying interest, investments such as like. So you need to really separate your holding company from your active business and your operating company. So that's one thing or another reason, but just kind of explain this capital dividend account. If you had investments with us, say, and you had $1 million and you sold them and you had a capital gain, well, half that gain is taxable and half of that gain is tax-free. And that tax-free portion goes into what's called a capital dividend account, kind of the same thing. And that's the exact same account the life insurance flows through.
Yeah.
So most business owners are familiar with taking the money out tax-free because it's always a goal how do we get the money out of the business tax-free? And they use this capital dividend account quite often because, you know, our largest accounts that we deal with are business owners, and they are creating fairly large holding companies over time. And that's their life savings to the business. And we're trying to say, how do we get this money out? Well, the other way to fund, go through a capital dividend account is exactly what you mentioned, is the life insurance. And that runs through that same account, tax-free at a time you need it. And it's just a outstanding, you know, way of trying to get money when you need it. And because there's lots of ways, whether it's, you know, funding retirement or whether it's paying a CRA because they want their money in 6 months. So there's lots of ways to go about. But, you know, you talk about, you know, getting to know a business owner thoroughly. And how exactly do you get down to the nitty gritty on how do you understand a business owner?
There's a lot involved there. And so, you know, when we do financial planning with individuals, we get to know them. We look at their incomes, their assets, their liabilities. We gather a lot of information in order to really put together a thorough plan and to be able to discuss what opportunities or gaps in planning a person has individually. When it comes to businesses, we also want to look at, you know, the corporate structure. You know, is it a sole proprietorship? Is it a partnership? Are there multiple shareholders? So we want to, you know, see an organizational chart. We also look at their financial statements. You know, we need to know what kind of revenue they're generating, what kind of assets and liabilities they have. We would, if they have a buy-sell agreement of any sort, we would also want to take a look at that. And, you know, we have such an advanced team at IG Wealth where we have lawyers on staff, we have accountants on staff, we have consultants like you, we have specialists like me. And so we have this large team of people who can all take a look at these various documents and really come together and synergize all the different, you know, areas that we look at to come back with a proper plan. So, you know, we have a couple of different questionnaires where we ask some questions about a client's goals, wishes, dreams, and get some of those soft facts in addition to the, you know, sort of the hard and numbers facts. But this takes a bit of time, and we can work with the client's lawyers and accountants directly to gather some of these documents. If you know, most business owners are pretty darn busy, and, you know, sometimes it's hard for them to gather them all. So with their permission, we can gather them from their own advisors and work together with them to really ensure that we're pulling together recommendations that make sense based on all of the facts. I always say that, you know, if we only have limited information, then our recommendations are based on that limited information and may not be the most accurate or the most realistic. So the more information we can gather, certainly the better that information and the recommendations that we make moving forward would be.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox is here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management, along with Jill Archer, Regional Estate and Insurance Specialist with IG. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. A quick break here. We're coming right back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox is here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management, along with Jill Archer, Regional Estate and Insurance Specialist with IG. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. We're talking business and insurance.
Yes. And, you know, as a somebody in this business, and I've done a lot of seminars and listened to you many times, but nothing hits home harder to me than actually an example. How does this affect? What's a scenario that you can come up with where, say, you know, somebody pre-retirement and he's a business owner, where insurance would fit?
Yeah, you know, yesterday I was actually working on a case for one of my advisors in the Niagara area, and we had a really great young entrepreneur. He's 39 years old, so his business is sort of in that, you know, growth phase still, but he has, you know, some excess cash flow in the business, and he's at a stage where he's really starting to understand the benefits of asset diversification. So we had a conversation with him about talking about him owning some insurance through his corporation. As you mentioned prior to the break, you know, this is really great when it's held in a holding corporation, not in an operating company, because we want to make sure that, you know, the cash values of these policies aren't tipping them over the 10% passive assets scale as well. And to ensure that when, you know, these share, if he sells the operating company, for example, that he can still own the insurance corporately. So, you know, when we started looking into some of the numbers, he had about $25,000 a year of extra cash flow. So remember, he's 39, so he's young, but he is in a situation where he has a family and he wants to ensure that at some point when he exits the business, he has enough assets there to ensure the smooth transition. So when we took a look at this $25,000 a year as an example for him, it initially started him with just over $530,000 of coverage, which really helped cover some of his business debts that were currently still there. Although we can often cover that with term insurance, he really wanted to look at this permanent insurance option, which was fantastic. So we looked at, you know, he didn't want to be paying for this for the rest of his life. He wanted to sort of be paying for it until close to retirement. And then he would be moving into a new phase of life. And, you know, he didn't want to still be putting money towards this contract at that point. So looking at $25,000 going in for about 20 years, which brings him to 59, 60 years old, that's going to grow that $500,000 of coverage to almost $5 million, like by age 90. This is the value of the compounding of these policies and tax sheltered growth. So if we're looking at him, you know, 85, 90 years old, passing away, he's got the potential death benefit of $5 million, which is almost 10 times what he initially bought, all for an investment of $25,000 over 20 years. And it was a really great solution that he was thrilled with. And we're in the processes of doing the application now for that.
Well, that's great. That's great. And you look at this and you often talk pennies on the dollar, and it really is. It's great. But the problem is getting the time to explain this to somebody and how this fits. And there often is a solution, and it's not the only solution. Okay, it's just one more quiver, arrow in our quiver of here's a way to, have a solution to your issue here. And sometimes it's actually the case is clients don't even know there's a problem. Okay, they haven't considered it. And so we're bringing, here's what could happen. Because you know what, to be honest, they're focused on the business. They're trying to make a thriving business run. And so you look at insurance as normally a cost. And I say, okay, well, based on what you just told me, this isn't a cost. This is an investment. Would you
Absolutely.
Not agree?
Absolutely. And, when we talk about it corporately, it's also an asset on the books. This is, like I said, a diversification of the assets that a client owns. And it is absolutely an investment. It's not the same kind of investment as a liquid investment would be. But, there's some advantage to that because we take 25,000 over 20 years, that's 500,000 going in there, and we're creating an asset worth 5 million. That's a huge return that's available to that client.
And I guess sometimes there's that idea of, okay, well, it's great. It's only if I die. Okay. It's going to the family, but it also could be used as collateral. Mm-hmm. Okay. I know personally, clients have used this as collateral, and they use it at a very high rate. When you look at investments such as a mutual fund or an equity investment, it's usually 50 cents. So you need, twice as much assets to come up with, $1. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you need $2 of investments to make $1. And insurance is quite a bit higher. The one I looked at was something about 95%. Does that seem about right?
So typically, if you're going to leverage an asset, life insurance as an asset, you can leverage it up to about 90% of the cash value within the policy. So it depends on the type of contract that's issued. Some contracts that have a little bit more variability and don't have some of the guarantees built in, typically that's universal life, it'll be about 75% of the cash value. But with whole life, permanent whole life, where there are some built-in guarantees and there's full vesting that occurs each and every year, the banks look at that and go, well, we know that each and every year, whatever that growth is fully vested. So they'll go up to 90% on those.
And what a great asset to have, because it's not like you're needing this asset. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not, you're not holding up, you're not tying up anything you actually need, because this isn't something you need until death. And if you did pass away, of course, then it pays the money and the creditor gets paid. So again, just another option for life insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox is here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management, along with Jill Archer, Regional Estate and Insurance Specialist with IG. You can find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Going to take a quick break here. We're back for our last segment moments from now.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox is here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management, along with Jill Archer, Regional Estate and Insurance Specialist with IG. You can find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. All right, we're going to sum this up. Business, insurance, and now retirement.
And you know what, it's kind of funny because we're trying to sum up something that is probably a week's worth of information. We're trying to do this in an hour. So again, if anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out and we will be able to help you in a far more thorough way. But this just gives you an idea. But again, life insurance isn't thought about often as a retirement vehicle. So now you've gone from a growth phase to a maturity phase, and now you've said, I'm retiring. I got my Canada Pension Plan, I got my RSPs, I got different investments. How does insurance play? It's stuck in your holding company. What do you do with this?
So going back to what we talked about just before the break, where this is an asset that you can use to leverage. So we see corporate retirement strategies being implemented on a regular basis with our business owners, where they've accumulated significant cash in their insurance policy and they don't necessarily need the full death benefit. So we look at leveraging that as an asset that creates essentially a line of credit with an income stream that comes on an annual basis. Now, if it's corporately owned, which, you know, we're talking business owners today, so typically it would be corporately owned and typically in the holdco, we create an income stream that pays into the holding company. So getting it out of the holding company, yes, there is some tax that would be charged on that depending on how the money is coming out. But you know, again, I've seen so many examples of this where the numbers just work out so favorably because they are getting a tax-free income stream into the corporation. If we own it individually, it's a tax-free income stream to the individual. But you know, we can tap into those cash values up to that 90%, but cash values are only a percentage of the total death benefit. So we're not tapping into 90% of the total payout. And in fact, you know, we can see some really significant opportunities there for business owners who don't have the same ability to typically create a pension for themselves and so on. And so if we can create an income stream for them, still leave them with a death benefit that pays into the corporation, you know, one of the really neat features that actually occurs with this strategy is, let's assume that client that I was talking about before, the 39-year-old. So I talked about how the death benefit at age 90 would be about 5 million. So let's say during retirement, he taps into some of those cash values and, you know, is using that as an asset. That $5 million death benefit is going to be reduced by the loan that has created that income stream in retirement, but it's never going to deplete the asset down to zero. So the insurance is still going to pay. When the insurance pays into the corporation, in the case of this example that I was giving before, it would pay the full 5 million-ish into the corporation. The loan gets paid off, and whatever remains there is liquid cash in the business. But that capital dividend account credit I talked about before is determined by the death benefit, not the death benefit minus the loan. So now, whatever other assets are in the corporation up to that $5 million amount can come out tax-free as well. So we've sort of double dipped there, which, you know, CRA is aware of and hasn't closed that loop yet, but we do have an opportunity for them to pull all sorts of other assets out of their corporation without tax by having that opportunity taken advantage of.
That sounds almost too good to be true, Jill. So what you're saying is you pay into this life insurance policy through your corporation. You're using, say, 85 cent dollars to make the premium or the deposits every year, if you qualify for the small business deduction, because you're only paying 15% tax. You've got all this insurance, and then at the end of this, I guess any bank or even Manulife Bank, if you will, they will take it as collateral. And when they give you money, or you're loaning, I guess, or you're borrowing money, do they borrow it like every month, or you just take a lump sum? Is there a way you can, or you can do either?
Yeah, so it's typically up to the lender what they'll allow, but you know, we often see it being done on an annual income stream basis. It's typically how we illustrate it, but at the end of the day, it's up to the lender whether they'd be flowing that out on a monthly basis or an annual basis. If it were me and it was coming in on an annual basis, I'd be putting it into a short-term investment to, you know, create that monthly income stream for sure. You know, but we deal a lot with Manulife Bank just because they're one of the insurance partners that we deal with, and so we have a great relationship with them. And them being tied to an insurance company, they really understand how these policies work. But it doesn't have to be a Manulife life insurance contract.
That's great. So you get this money. It can be paid annually, likely. You put it into a short term. You pull this out as a dividend from the company. So you are now paying tax on that at a lower rate, but albeit slightly lower. And then at death, you pay off the loan gets paid off. This is kind of all done behind the scenes. There's no real work to the business owner. This is almost a legacy you've created through life insurance that the bank is more than willing to do this because they're getting a good interest rate on their loan. They know it's going to get paid off. And then, of course, your heirs will get this money. You get to flow all this money through the capital dividend account. What a great deal this is. Okay. Mm-hmm. This really is for, and again, as a business owner, they should be aware of this. It's one of those things that is a perk of being a business owner, a perk of being a risk taker all your life. And you've now created this flow of money for while you're retired and enjoying it. So again, I know so many things we can talk about, Jill, as mm-hmm. far as insurance go, and we can go on and on, and we look forward to next time you're on. But again, for those business owners that have some questions regarding true business planning, life insurance is one part of this, and we would be happier to obviously go through this with you.
We have been planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox has been here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management, along with Jill Archer, Regional Estate and Insurance Specialist with IG. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Another fabulous show. Thank you, everyone, so much. We'll chat again next week.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.